My name is Stephanie O'Keefe, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, you all. My home group is the Arch Creek Group in Miami, Florida. When I shared that with Chester on the way over here on Friday, I still told him I never talked about that in meetings. I suppose it's like one of those things. I said something the other night, and one of my dear friends looked at me and said, "Oh, I read about that in the history books." We don't get mad, we get even. But you know, once I've told you my name and that I'm an alcoholic and that I belong to a group of Alcoholics Anonymous, from here on in, God's in charge. That's my part. Those are throwaway lines. We hear them, at least I go to a lot of meetings, and I hear them a couple of hundred times a week, you know. And yet they really aren't. Because when I say that to you today, for the first time in my life, I know who I am and what I am and where I belong, and I never knew that. Before I start, I'd like to thank the committee and particularly John, who I forced into asking me here, and David and Joyce and particularly Chester and his lovely wife, Chris, who have been my host and hostess this weekend. I don't know about you all, but I think this has just been perfect. I know there was a lot of work. I was never a connoisseur of wines. I really didn't care what the label said. If it said free, that was nice. That's all I asked. But I'm kind of a connoisseur of conventions, and I've been to a lot of them. And I want to tell you that there's a lot of work gone into this convention, and it shows. It's been warm and wonderful, and there's been so much sharing and yet time to reflect. There's been these big meetings here in this room and the little meetings in the smaller rooms and the meeting in the hall and the meeting before the meeting and the meeting after the meeting and the meeting in the pool and the meeting on the way to the car. And I don't know about you, but I am just filled. I am absolutely filled with the joy and gratitude of this opportunity of spending this much time with people who are getting better. And I can't thank you enough for all that you've given me. I'm so filled I could have gone home. And I thought about it. I think conventions are wonderful. And I have a very special place in my heart for Maryland. I grew up, my summers anyway, on the Chesapeake Bay in a little town called Arundel on the Bay, and I haven't been back there. And well, I was there around the time of the Spanish-American War, so I know it's changed. I went to school in Washington, D.C. for 6 years. That freshman English was a killer. And because you get out of Washington, if you cough, I spent a lot of time in Maryland, and they were always good times. And so it's like coming home. And I even spoke at this convention yesterday when it was in the Elks. and that's a long time ago. So it's great being here. And not only is it great to be at a convention and to be back in a state that I really love and have such wonderful memories of, this is a very special weekend for me. Friday was my 38th wedding anniversary. We'll count him. And if it hadn't been for that, if it hadn't been my 38th wedding anniversary, because my husband's not here, I would have offered to help that poor speaker on Friday night who was afraid to sleep by himself. The secret of our marriage may be that Ray went to Rhinebeck, New York on Friday, and I got on a plane and came to Baltimore. And that's maybe why we lasted 38 years. But I have very... The day I walked into AA, I had absolutely no anonymity because my cute, slightly chubby husband who runs around the world talking about me, and it gets on tapes and everything else. And so those of you who have been suffering from insomnia, wondering who I was and what I was like, now you know. You can go to bed tonight and sleep like a baby, because he talks about me as she who must be obeyed. And if you believe that, there's a bridge up in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you after the meeting. And he also runs around talking about me as the current Mrs. O'Keefe. Well, as you can see, I've been current for 38 years. And he says he does that to keep me on my toes. So I've taken to referring to him, to make him a little bit nervous, as my first husband. Not only is there Friday for me to think about and all those years, and it's a miracle that we've been married 38 years, there's Monday. And you know there's those funny little expressions that we hear in AA all the time. And oh God, I hope I can think of one. I know, like, you know, the person that sits in the meeting and says, yeah, I've been here for a few 24s. And you know they got here around the time Adam and Eve came. I mean, you know they've been here for hundreds of years. And then there are the people who the day after they celebrate their AA birthday say, I'm coming up on the next year. Well, I can honestly say to you today, I'm coming up on 9 years because it's tomorrow. And then Tuesday when I'm in a meeting, I'll say, I'm coming up on 10 years. And then, of course, there's today, and it's Father's Day. And I want to congratulate all you fathers. I'm very grateful to mine. And what happens? But we have a woman speaker, and if you had any doubt that you were in an AA convention, that would sort of solidify it that we got a woman up here talking this morning. What we were like and how we got here and what we're like today. Like most of you, I was born. And, you know, then after that we all begin to say, well, that wasn't like my experience. And but I don't know about you, but I grew up filled with insecurity and self-centered fear and resentment and self-pity and guilt. I came out of the womb guilty. You know, I did it. And remorse for the mistakes I had made. I felt as if all my life, I felt as if there were all these holes inside me. I felt like Swiss cheese. And I had all these holes inside me. And you look like American cheese. You look like you had it all together. And it never once occurred to me that I was comparing my insides with your outsides. Or that you were doing the same thing. And that I looked like I had it all together. And you felt like Swiss cheese. Because we never talked about that stuff. I never would have told you how scared I was. I never would have told you how I didn't feel that I fit in. That I fit into my family or my school, or the job I had, or where I lived. I never would have told you that. I told you how wonderful I was. I so desperately wanted to be happy that I thought maybe if I had your approval and your applause and your accolades, you know, that would fill the holes. And I went out, and I looked like a success. And I never once felt right. And I never once told you. And I went to school. It came easy to me, so I kept doing it. I never did anything that I didn't think I was going to succeed in, so I looked like a success. I mean, I didn't try stuff that maybe looked like it was going to be hard or that I wouldn't be a star or get a plaque for or really be number one. And if I, by mistake, got myself in a situation where I wasn't going to succeed or I thought you were going to laugh at me, I got out of it. I ran. I pretended like I didn't care. I wasn't interested. And I went home. And I kept telling you how wonderful I was. And while I was going to school and working, because we didn't have the money for me to do this kind of thing, I was born and raised in wealthy Westchester County in New York. And it was nice, but I could compare starting very early because we didn't have a lot of money. And there wasn't the money for me to go to school, but I worked and I got scholarships. And I want you to be very impressed with this. I went even to graduate school. And didn't help, but it certainly didn't help for the job I did for many, many years, which was dishes, dust, and diapers. But I'm very glad I did that. I never would have learned that stuff if I hadn't had somebody standing over me. But the whole time I'm working and going to school and looking like a success and telling you I am also desperately searching for a husband. Now, that's not fashionable to admit to these days, but that's what I was doing. I wanted... I used to say somebody who looked like Rock Hudson. I couldn't. But I want somebody who looked like a movie star. But because I wasn't a kid anymore, I knew there were things, you know, sort of important things that you look for in marriage. And so I wanted somebody who was strong, and I wanted somebody who was intelligent. I don't mean a lot of schooling or education necessary, but somebody who enjoyed using their mind. And somebody who had a sense of humor, because I kind of realized that if you could laugh, something that I did not do for many, many years, that almost any situation could be eased if I could learn to laugh at myself. And I wanted this man, I wanted this person to fill the holes. I wanted him to make me happy. And I found him and I trapped him and we got married and we did not live happily ever after. Because for the first few years of our marriage, I thought he was. You know, he is. Those of you who know him or have heard him, I'm sure would agree that he is extremely intelligent and very, very funny and a very strong man, and 3 out of 4 ain't bad. But I thought for the first few years of our marriage that he was the stupidest, weakest, least funny person that God had ever put on this earth because of the way he drank. Now, I didn't like the way he drank before I married him, but not to worry, I'd fix it. Married to me, he would not find it necessary to drink in that fashion. And we all know how that one went. Now, when I came into AA, they told me to identify, don't compare, and I didn't have the vaguest idea what they were talking about. I really didn't. I understood what the words meant, but I didn't know what you meant by that. So I'm going to tell you something that's going to certain people in this room say, oh, God, I can't identify with her at all. Because I'm going to tell you that 30 years ago, I went to Al-Anon, and to this day, I am so grateful for everything that Al-Anon has given me over the years. But you know, a lot of you didn't do it. It's not socially acceptable in our set to do this that way. It's okay to go to 3 or 4 Al-Anon meetings and then go across the hall to the AA meeting and say, this is where I really belong. And it's okay to have been sober for a long time in AA and say, I really need Al-Anon. But to be in Al-Anon 20 years and then go across the hall? But you see, When we learned, when I learned what it really meant to identify, don't compare, I know that that might not be your story, but it is somebody's story, and I'm not going to talk about that part of my story, except to mention it. Because I know that there's somebody out there who can really identify with what I'm saying. And if they're not there, they're sitting in a meeting in your group somewhere. And they're scared to death because they don't want to admit that they need help. And I know because I was there. But even if that's not your story, I shouldn't drive you out of the room because your story was, I'm too young to be an alcoholic. Or my job, I couldn't be an alcoholic because I'm a... Or I'm too old. Or I know too much. You see, we all had explanations and rationalizations. And one of the reasons that I used for not wanting to go to AA and say, God, I need your help, was I didn't want to let Al-Anon down. You see, I knew the words. I knew it was a disease. And I knew it was baffling and cunning and powerful. But I still said, why me? Why me after all I've been through? Why me after all I know? Knowledge availed us nothing, and I am a prime example of that. I knew a lot about alcoholism, not only because I was an Al-Anon, because I went to hundreds and hundreds of open AA meetings to support my family, and towards the end to find out how to drink so you wouldn't notice. And you can pick up a lot of information. You gave me a lot of help. You know, you said these social drinkers, I never understood them. They'd take a drink and they'd put it down and they wouldn't go back. Ha ha, I could do that. Get the one in the kitchen. I want to thank you for all your help. You know, I didn't let Al-Anon down. I got a disease. And the only way I let Al-Anon down is by fighting, by saying, no, no, I won't. Not me. My prayer used to be, please, God, let me get sober, but don't let me have to go to AA. And I loved you, but I just didn't, my false pride didn't want me to have to say, my name is Stephanie and I'm an alcoholic. I knew where the help was. I knew what it was, and I kept drinking. I started to drink late in life. My husband was getting sober in AA and had been sober. And I'll tell you right now that I would have started a lot earlier. I would have started in fourth and fifth grade with you guys if I had known what I found out. First of all, I tried alcohol, and I didn't like the taste. And half a drink or a quarter of a drink made me feel sick to my stomach. So I didn't find out that it would fill the holes. If I'd known that, I'd have started a lot earlier. I kept trying. I probably had a drink a semester in high school. Oh, God, that tastes awful, and I feel sick. And I probably worked up to a drink a month in college. And by the time I was in my late 30s, my stomach had settled down. I didn't particularly like the taste, but it took the edge off. And it made it all right. And alcohol worked for me for a while. It filled the holes. And then it stopped working. And it started to make the holes bigger and bigger and bigger until there was nothing left inside me. I felt completely empty. And it wasn't quiet in there. It felt like there was a tremendous wind blowing through me. And the fear and the self-pity and the guilt and the remorse and the resentment and the self-centeredness that I had lived with all my life just took over. I didn't want to drink that way. My husband was in AA. And his sobriety meant a great deal to me. It was something that I had prayed for a long time. And I wanted to support him, and I wanted to be a good wife and a good mother and a good person. And I couldn't do it. It says no matter how far down the scale we have gone, I don't know whether I went as far as you or you went further, or I don't know whether I did more things or less things, or got into more trouble or less trouble. But I know today that it took what it took for me to get here. It took every single drink I drank. I couldn't have left any of it out. And it took every single stupid, inane, insensitive, mean-spirited, illegal, immoral, unkind thing that I did for me to admit that my life was unmanageable. You know, when I first got here, I was still trying to pretend I was better than you, you know, so I didn't want to lie, so I sort of indicated things. Like, I wanted you to think that I was a sweet little old lady in sneakers who happened on occasion to drink too much. The occasions, of course, being Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I could say to you, honestly, I was never arrested for DUI. I should have been any number of times. Any number of times I drove drunk. And I was against that. I was a member of MAD. Had this sticker on my car. I sort of tried to indicate that I was a periodic, you know. That would make me better than you. I don't know why. I mean, you know what I forgot was that bad was better in AA. I mean, that's really what counts. It's those are the people who, you know, really get the attention. This is the only organization in the world where it's kind of embarrassing to have to admit that you haven't spent 10 years in a penitentiary. Or that you haven't gone through five husbands. Or darn, I wasn't hospitalized 32 times. I'm sorry about that. I don't know any place else, you know, that we'd be red-faced over those, you know, not having done those things. I went as far as I could go. I went as far as I could go. Maybe, just maybe, I could have gotten another drink down. But I couldn't have stood the pain for one day longer. I just couldn't have lived with that pain inside me. And I know today that one of the great gifts that was given to me, and I know was given to you, was that phrase, identify, don't compare. And one of the ways that I found out exactly what they were talking about was, when I was about a year sober, I walked into my home group, and I looked at the speaker, and I knew who owned the big black Harley Davidson parked outside the meeting. I mean, there was this guy, young enough to be my son, in the tight jeans and the high black boots, no shirt, but he looked covered, he had a lot of hair and tattoos. And he had a diamond in his ear and a pigtail down his back, and I thought to myself, oh, God, they said identify, don't compare. And this is going to be tough. And, you know, as far as the outside was concerned, we had nothing in common. We had absolutely nothing in common. Absolutely nothing in common. But when he talked about his insides, I knew I had no problem identifying with this man. When he told me how scared he was and how angry he was and how sorry he felt for himself. And when he told me about his bottom, it was different than my bottom. But we shared something in common that I hope everyone in this room who's a member of AA shares. Bottom, whatever that was. Because that's the first promise you gave me, that I would never have to drink again. And I hope we share bottom, wherever that was, in a jail, in a hospital, in a kitchen, on the street, in a penthouse. It's bottom that we share. And then he talked about how he got well, or was getting better. And that's the path that I wanted to follow, and I had no problem identifying with that man, as long as I forgot the differences. You know, we talk about all these things, and none of them are important. If I stood here right now and waited for the white little old lady from Larchmont, who'd been pregnant 8 times and didn't start drinking till her late 30s, and said, that's the only person I can identify with, I'd be alone again the same way I was before I got here. I'd be all by myself again. And I don't ever want to be that wet place. There isn't a single person in this room who can't and who hasn't in some way given to me, when they talk about their insides, their bottom, and how they're getting better. I said to myself, oh God, I wish I'd come here. I should have come here 5 years ago, you know, before I got here. And I, you know, racked my brain over that, and I felt badly. And then I got a little more honest, and I said, oh God, I should have been here 10 years ago. But you know, I came the right day. I came absolutely the right day. It took every drink. It took every stupid thing for me to admit my powerlessness and my unmanageability. I don't think anybody comes in here without some problems. I went by bottoms. I stuffed them under the rug. I pretended they didn't happen. I hoped you'd forget. I hoped you'd never find out. I took any number of opportunities. No, not yet. I'm not ready yet. For instance, I had a little rule for myself. I said, if I ever drink in the morning, then I'll go to AA. Well, I drank in the morning, and I drank a lot in the morning. I drank a lot of mornings, and so I made up a new rule. If I ever get caught drinking in the morning, I'll go to AA. And I got caught, and it wasn't enough. I hope they didn't notice. I hope they forgot, you know. Maybe they think it's because I had a cold, you know, whatever. Stupid. I was my self-image, you know, I was trying to be the perfect look-like. And I was dying inside. I did so many, besides the illegal and the immoral things, I did so many stupid things. I was, my husband said he always admired how I leapt out of bed in the morning, no matter how drunk I'd been the night before. It wasn't until I got sober that I told him that I was leaping out to make sure that the raccoons hadn't spread the beer cans all over the backyard, which they had a habit of doing. And I had a tremendous resentment against raccoons. And I also didn't want the garbage men to worry about me. So I would fill my 24 hours worth of a green leaf bag, you know, those big leaf bags, full of empties, and I'd put them in my car and I'd dump them on your front lawn. Let the neighbors worry about you. All right, take them down and put them into the Goodwill bin or the Salvation Army bin. You know, that nice Mrs. O'Keefe, what a wonderful community-minded person she is. I had problems with men. I had problems with money, and I had problems with power, and I don't need to go into any details because I know we pretty much share this. There's one word to describe slink up to you, you know. It was sorry. It was just sorry. And nothing changed. The pain got worse. And I got more terrified. And I got feeling sorrier for myself and guiltier in what took it away. Another drink, another drunk. And nothing changed except in those last 2 years, the prayer I prayed. Because my prayer had been, please God, let me get sober, but don't let me have to go to AA. You know, I knew the right words. I knew how to say thy will be done, but what I really meant was here are the instructions. I want it done my way. Good old Frank Sinatra and my way. But my prayer changed the last couple of years, and it changed very simply. I said, please, God, give me the courage to go to AA. Please, give me the courage to go to AA. Now, you have to be careful about what you pray for. Because one Tuesday in June of 1983, I was arrested for shoplifting. And this did not fit in with my image. This was not the picture I wanted to present. And I went home after this. They didn't. They took my picture. They fingerprinted me. They told me to come back to court. And I went home to sweep this under the rug. And I had a plan going. I want you to know that it was a pretty good plan of how I was going to get out of this. This was the worst thing that had ever happened. It wasn't the worst thing. I'd done a lot worse things. But I really got caught. And I hadn't even had a drink that day. I just needed something. I wanted something. And I took it. And I'd done that a lot. But I had a plan going. And it was it was a great plan. Even up to and including the fact that my husband was the local judge and in the next town, and I was going to get away with this. And furthermore, I was going to sue if he ever found out, was I ever going to sue, you know, breach of confidentiality, and I was going a mile a minute, and I couldn't sleep. And about 4 o'clock in the morning, I suddenly remembered, you know, those clear thoughts that an alcoholic gets maybe for just a half a second. And I remembered my prayer. And I got down on my knees and I said, please, God, let me use this. Let this be bottom for me. And I felt this kind of tremendous sense of momentary relief that maybe the battle was over and the war was finished. And I felt so grateful, and I thanked God, and I got up, and I still couldn't sleep. And by about 5 o'clock in the morning, I was rethinking my plan and going back to plan A, you know, how I was going to get away with this. And I knew that if I didn't tell somebody right away, I was going to go buy this. Now, I did not have to call AA. I had to roll over in bed and tap AA on the shoulder. And AA reached out its arms, that warm welcome that we give the new alcoholic, and it said, do you have to wake me up at 5 o'clock in the morning to tell me this? And I said yes, because otherwise, if I hadn't told somebody, I wasn't going to go through with it.
I just wasn't going to go through with it. And I went to my first meeting that night, my first closed meeting. You know, there was somebody very new in one of the meetings, small meetings, and they were sharing. And God, I my heart went out to this woman. Because she had about 2 months, and she wanted what we all had. And, oh, God, I remember how scary that first year was and how I thought it was going to be nothing except not drinking. And you know what? I was willing to do that. That's how bad it was, that I was willing. And I think not drinking is awful. It's just awful. That's not sobriety. But that first year, yeah, nobody could say the right thing, do the right thing. I mean, heaven forfend that you would say to me, "What's for dinner, Mom?" I'm trying to get sober here. Can't you understand? Leave me alone. This is not easy. You know, last night I was listening to that countdown, and I said to my, I mean, tears came in my eyes with the people with the 35 and the 40-some years, and I thought, oh, well, I don't know whether I want to make 40-some years because, yipes, little old lady in sneakers. But those big years, you know, I sure want to get double digits anyway, and but the tears came to my eyes, and I thought of, you know, gee, how wonderful that is, and tears came to my eyes when I, you know, heard about the people with 6 months and 3 months and a month and a week. And boy, the tears came. I don't want to go back there. I don't want to have to do that again. I don't have to. I don't have to. But there really wasn't a right thing to say. Some of you, see, I knew a lot. I knew a lot about AA. I knew a lot of people in AA. I had to hide my drinking from my family, the neighbors, AA, Al-Anon. My job, I worked in the field of alcoholism. I was your friendly counselor. And and you told me I did a good job, and I did. I could identify with you. I knew just what you were going through, and I could hardly wait for you to get out of my office so I could drink. But I went to my first closed meeting of AA on a Wednesday night, and half of you said, "What are you doing here? You know, this is a closed meeting, Stephanie. Are you writing a book or something?" And the other half said, "We've been waiting for you." We knew. So I, you know, why didn't you tell those other dumb bunnies over there? Don't know why I'm here. But you couldn't. You know, there was nothing right. That first year, I was like an open wound. I was like an open sore. And I really, about the only thing I can say is that I was willing. I was willing to feel like that, if necessary, for the rest of my life. But thank God that AA is so much more than just not drinking. Because not drinking is hell. But I wanted not to drink, and then I wanted the pain to go away. And you said to me that if you'll do what I did, it will, Stephanie. It will. And I was that willing, scared, arrogant. "How are you, Stephanie?" "Fine. I'm fine. I'm just fine." "I'm sure you were thinking, if you're so fine, why'd you come here?" But I couldn't tell you how I felt. And it was only because you trusted me with all my stupid false pride and arrogance enough to tell me how you felt that I began to be able to tell you how I felt. That you opened up to me and let me in, see you inside. Was I ever able to say, "Yeah, that's me. That's me. I can identify with that." And I began that journey. And walked on that path. And that path to me is nothing more than the place that someone else has walked before and marked it. You know, we were talking just before the meeting, and I said one of the great gifts that my sponsor gave me when I came into AA was that she said to me, this is what I did. She didn't say, you do this. She said, this is what I did. And she had 15 years sobriety. And if I wanted what she had. You know, when I came on Friday and I looked at the theme of this convention, the keys to the kingdom, it's such a perfect concept. Because that's what was given to me by AA. The keys to a new way of life. To living in an entirely different way. To living comfortably inside my skin for the first time. To trying to have the outsides and the insides match. And AA said to me, here, Stephanie, here are the keys, the 12 steps. Here is what we did. But those keys are useless unless I pick it up. Unless I pick them up. Unless I begin to try. Unless I follow the instructions and follow the directions and the suggestions. Those keys are no good. They'll never turn the lock unless I use them. And that's what it is for me today. You know, I could stand here and be a Sunday morning, and that's nice, but it doesn't mean a hill of beans if when I leave here today, I don't practice what I'm talking about. It's just words, 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 said Eliza Doolittle. And I can use her last name because she isn't in the program. But she said, words, 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 don't tell me, show me. And that was the gift you gave me. You showed me how to live. It wasn't so much your words, but it was the way you were on a daily basis, the way you are. You know, someone talked about being the only copy of the big book. I used to say that some of my children have more sobriety than I do. I forgot to mention that I have children. Being the good member of a small religious sect that gives gold stars for having children, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 children. It's called the O'Keefe Modified Plan of Birth Control. And I sort of pictured, I was pregnant 8 times, but I sort of pictured 7 children as just about right, because they can get married and live near us, and we'll go out to dinner every night of the week, but we won't ever be a burden because we'll only come to your house once a week. And then we moved the nest moved away from the chickens, and we're living in Florida, and everybody else is scattered throughout the country. But one of the great things for me today is not only, we're sort of the trap family singers of AA, because not only is my husband a recovering alcoholic, but, oh dear God, 6 of our 7 children are recovering in this program. And I am the beneficiary of that, of them living their program and sometimes not doing it, you know, right, and giving me an opportunity to practice restraint of pen and tongue and minding my own business and tolerance and patience and all those things. But it is beautiful. It is just beautiful. And it is their story and their miracle. But we even at one point thought of electing a chairman and a secretary just in our kitchen kind of thing. It's really great. The first year was hard, and it was particularly hard. It was hard for me. It was hard for everybody to admit that I, Mrs. Wonderful, same Stephanie, was powerless over anything. But that idea of powerlessness not only took care of the alcohol, but it's also one of the great spiritual concepts that I think has ever been developed. Has ever come out of anybody's mind or concept. Because it not only takes care of my drinking, it secondly means to me anyway that if I accept my powerlessness, if I really accept that first step, then I have to do the next 11 steps or I'm beginning to take the power back. There's no, I don't have a third step problem or a fourth step problem or an eighth step problem. Because if I'm powerless, then I will do these next 11 steps. And besides that, if I am powerless, if I am not the higher power, if it's not me, if I'm not God, how disappointing. But there is room for that power to come into my life. For it, whatever it is for you. For the God of my understanding to fill me. If I really accept my powerlessness. So it's so much more just in that first step. And that idea of we, that we're going to do this together, that I never have to be alone. I never have to fight this battle by myself. When I drank, I considered myself to be a lady, but I used language that would have made a sailor blush. And I'd like to talk just for a second about two four-letter words. One is in the second step, and it's that. We came to believe that. You know, that's the great leap of faith that I was asked to make when I first came here. Not, it wasn't about, you know, defining the higher power, finding out who God was, and arguing and debating about all that stuff. It was to believe that something could happen to me, that I could be restored to sanity. That's the big leap of faith that's asked of us in the beginning. And what happens? We go to meetings, and I figured out why I was asked to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I showed you I went to 180. You're going to tell me what to do. Every time I went to a meeting, I looked around and I saw sober people. And I must admit, I took your inventory. You know, I said, well, if they can make it, I can. Maybe I can. There's hope anyway. There's this much hope, a smidge. And then I'd go to the meeting the next day, and there'd be more people, and they'd be sober, and I'd say, maybe, just maybe, if they made it, maybe I can make it. And the next four-letter word is in the third step, and it's, I made a decision to turn my life and my will over to the care of God. The care of God. God, if God wanted my life, I'd be at the beginning of this meeting, hopefully up there. But God hasn't said, recall her today yet. I want her back. And God gave me free will, one of the biggest gifts that we as human beings have. And he doesn't want it back. What I try to do is put it into God's care today. I try to give it to God's care. When I had 90 days, and I thank God nobody asked me how I felt about this, my sponsor said, do you think you're an alcoholic? Do you believe that you are powerless over alcohol? Have you come to believe that you can be restored to sanity? Do you want to stay sober in AA? And I said yes, and she said, fine, we're going to do the third step prayer. And I want you to go home and start on the fourth step. And that's the decision I made at 90 days, and that's the decision I made this morning, that to the best of my ability, I'm going to go on with the rest of this program today. I'm going to try and live this program today. Just what do we mean and what do we do, it says in the big book. And then it tells us. We try to practice these principles in all our affairs to the best of our ability. We try. When I did 4 and 5 and looked as honestly at myself and God, I needed so much help. I needed God's help and someone else's help. It was the first time in my life that I'd ever really faced myself and who and what I was. It was the first time that I even had a prayer of a chance of having, we hear this word in AA all the time now, a relationship. I had a chance of having a relationship with myself. And the sixth and seventh step gave me a real relationship and a working dependence on the God of my understanding. Because the little old lady with the garden that let the house go down the drain and let the yard go to pot, and all the neighbors used to comment, you know, she's a drunk. She's a drunk. And one day she got sober. She got the house painted and shutters back up and the roof fixed, and she worked in the garden. And one of her neighbors came by and said, oh, my, it looks so lovely. It's just lovely what God has done here. She said, well, you should have seen it when God had it all by himself. And that's really what the sixth and seventh step is. God is going to do these things, but I have to do the footwork. And that's my reliance and my dependence on a higher power. It's going to be on his timetable when he's ready. And 8 and 9 gave me the beginning of the possibility of a relationship with everybody else. And that's all there is, a relationship with me and with God and with you. And without those 6 steps, I didn't have the possibility. But by doing them, I made a beginning. A beginning that we continue each day by continuing to inventory, to look at myself as honestly as I can today, and to admit when I'm wrong. To pray. And to meditate. You know, I have a choice today. For a long, long time, I ran from God. And today I choose to seek God and his will. And I pretty much know what God's will is for me today. I don't know about these people who don't know. You know, what is God's will for me today? I'm pretty sure that at least for today, I know what it is. It's for me to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know that. Over and above that, the God of my understanding wants me to be of use. Something I wanted to be all my life, and I couldn't. I couldn't because the self-centeredness got in my way. And the booze made it impossible. But I can be of use today. I have that ability. I can try. I can seek God's will for me today. The God of my understanding wants me to do whatever I'm supposed to be doing today. I don't know what that is for you. I know what it is for me. It's, you know, it's the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday kind of living and do the best job I can. The God of my understanding wants me to be happy. And if I accept today as it is, not as I wished it were or I planned it to be, I was determined to make it, if I just accept this day, then I'm going to be happy. I may not be ho, ho, ho happy, but I'll be content because I'll accept what this day brings. Early on in my sobriety, somebody described or defined a spiritual awakening as the awakening of my spirit. And it meant a great deal to me because that's a great deal of what it is today. And I can only have that continuing unfolding if I continue to practice the first 11 steps. Whereas to try to carry the message, this is doing it, but whoever made the coffee and whoever cleans up at your meeting, whoever has the key, whoever mops the floor, that's just as important. Whoever comes to that meeting, I can't tell you how you carried a message to me when you just were in your seat when I first got here. I didn't know your name. I didn't know who you were. You didn't even have to open your mouth. You carried a message for me that AA worked. And that you were grateful for what you had been given. And you didn't have to say a word. All you had to do was show up there. I can carry that message every time I go to a meeting. And I'm asked to try to practice these principles in all my affairs, and that's the difference between talking and walking. It's the difference between words and living. I'm only asked to try, and I fail. Most of the time, I'm going to be honest with you, I sort of skip along this road. There have been a couple of times in the last few months that I have really trudged. It's been hard. One of those times I asked, why me? Those famous words, why me? Why do I have to have this? Why do I have to accept it? Why can't I confront that person? And I thank God I have a sponsor that I can talk to things over with. And I begin to understand that when I'm told to thank God for all things, that it means things, hard things like this, because these are opportunities to grow and to change and to practice and to practice. I had something else hard happen, a kind of hangover from something years and years and years ago. And I was given that rare opportunity to be there for somebody else. Not to be the star of the show, which I was always trying to be, but just to be there for somebody who hurt so badly. Don't want to make it all right. No, I couldn't. And know that I wasn't alone. That the God of my understanding, and that each of you were with me. I hope on a daily basis that I'm grateful for all that you've given me, for all that I've been given. I know that there are times that I'm more grateful than others. And this morning's got to be one of them. The love I've felt here, the giving, the sharing, are going to be part of my joy one day at a time. It is through you that I see God. It is through you that I hear God. I never want to miss that message. I never want to not listen. You told me that I didn't have to drink again, and that I never had to be alone again. And I know today with a certainty in my heart that as long as I will use this fellowship, or these fellowships of AA and of Al-Anon and Alateen, and as long as I will use these 12 steps, try to live them to the best of my ability, and as long as I will keep my contact with the God of my understanding and my dependence and my reliance on Him, and as long as I will use you in the best sense of that word, to use somebody else, to listen, to learn from you, I know that I will never walk alone, and neither will you. We'll walk together. Thank you.